Here. Commissioner Gary, what's up first?
Let's do roll call. Chair Bernard.
Here.
Commissioner Fisher.
Here.
Commissioner Humberston.
Here.
There are only three commissioners present right now. We have several issues on the agenda. We'll start with some staff updates. First, if Rich Swift and or team will come forward for a quick update on the tobacco retail license policy session. Please all introduce yourselves.
Richard Swift with H3S, and I'm here to talk about tobacco retail licensing very briefly. And I have with me
Armando Jimenez.
So I'll let Armando sort of kick on this, but we were going to talk with the board today about tobacco retail licensing, and we decided to not do that. And I can allow Armando to go ahead and update the board real quickly on that.
Good morning, Chair Bernard and Commissioners. My name is Armando Jimenez, and I am the Population Health Strategies Manager in the Public Health Division. And I work with the team to help provide support for the Comprehensive Tobacco Control Program in public health. At the January 7, 2020 Administrator Issues discussion, there was a brief update on tobacco retail licensing. And in the short discussion, there were several questions that were raised by several of you. Very important, very thoughtful questions that we felt as staff that we needed to go back and provide some comprehensive answers to. And it was our plan to bring those answers to you in a policy session and provide you an update. One of the central questions that was presented was kind of an understanding of what the legislative landscape look like, specific to what's happening at the federal and state level. And considering that that was a primary portion of our discussion, we wanted to just come back and say, considering that there is some discussion at the current short session around statewide tobacco retail licensing, we felt it was most beneficial for us and for you to wait for the outcome of that particular discussion, and then allow us as staff to have the time to be able to understand what that really means for Clackamas County, and also how we can be best prepared in the event that the state does move in that direction. So we wanted to just make sure we could provide you the most current and relevant information for the questions that you had, given that they would likely be different in the context of the statewide tobacco retail licensing system. But the constant theme that we've been working under, and this is something that's very important to us in public health, is our goal is to protect the health and well-being of the youth of Clackamas County. And in that pursuit, we want to make sure that we are committed to using the most effective and comprehensive strategies towards that goal. So we, in the spirit of that, we hope to come back to you in the future to provide you more relevant and current updates.
So essentially what we've done with tobacco retail licensing is we've hit pause pending what the state legislature does. And as Armando has talked about, we will be definitely back in front of the board in this conversation.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah, I saw that there was discussion at the state level about this. I was wondering, is there a bill? If there is, what's the number? And at some point in time, will you be asking us to testify on behalf of that bill?
Okay, so I have with me Trent Wilson from PGA, who has, he told me, let me talk about that stuff, so.
Thank you. Yes, Trent Wilson, Government Affairs. There is a bill, a Senate Bill 1577. Our county logo is already on a support letter for statewide TRL, per the language within our principles for the state agenda that we have. So we are supporting that bill. I don't anticipate we'll need to send anybody to testify, but if there's interest in that, we can keep you notified.
What's the status of the bill?
The bill's recently been amended to include, it was not originally a statewide tobacco retail license bill, but it's recently been amended to include that. It had a very broad relating to clause, so now it does provide for a statewide tobacco retail license. It also has a few other preemptions that are not our favorite preemptions, but they would still move forward on a lot of good work for a statewide tobacco retail license. And a lot of jurisdictions are, I'd say, back and forth about the value of either having piecemeal tobacco retail licenses across the state, where residents can go across the county border or not across the county border to get what they need, or businesses can do the same thing, versus having one holistic program as well. So it's not a not a perfect bill. It's a good bill, and we're trying to reconcile that and fight for what we need out of it.
And what's the status of the bill?
It's currently in Senate Ways and Means Committee. It's in the full committee right now, and it's never going to go to the House floor unless the Senate Republicans come back.
Yeah. So it's likely dead.
Pending the probable removal of cap and trade, I don't think it's actually dead until we know what the senators and now the House Republicans are going to do.
Okay, so if indeed the legislature is stopped and this bill isn't moving forward, then when will we have an update back from you as to what we can do at the local level?
Sure.
Well, I'm not sure that the legislature has stopped.
No, but when we know. Like, we'll know soon. Because is it March 8th, sine die?
March 8th is sine die, so it'll be done in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then there will be a special session called, as it's being considered. But the House Republicans just walked out, so
right. But they probably won't do this at a special session, do they? Or would they expect that tobacco retail licensing would rise to the level of special session?
Oh, I don't know if this would rise to the level of special session for tobacco retail licensing.
Okay, Rich, when will you be back if this isn't
So if there's no movement, then what I will do is work with the county administrator and find time with the board to have a conversation about and actually what will happen is if nothing moves, then the questions that were previously asked, that documentation has been prepared for, then we'll bring that forward and then have a conversation about next steps with the board regarding what the board's desire is for tobacco retail licensing in Clackamas County at the local level.
Okay, Martha?
Yeah, so Trent, what's the possibility if it doesn't, you know, this is going to be a messy short session, we all know that, and a lot of things may die, including the work we've been doing on the locks for a public corporation, but my sense is we bring those back in the, so I'm assuming the chances of this coming back in a longer session would be quite good, as well as a public corporation, I mean. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work in one, a lot of times it takes a while. And I've always felt that this is such a serious statewide public health issue that it needs to be handled by the public health, the state, at this point. So
we would be assisted, with state action, at that level. So if the state does nothing, then we will be
likely for more than one thing this bill.
Mm-hmm. Then we will be back sort of at the local level to have a conversation. And we will certainly be talking with OHA Public Health to see where this sits, what their plans are, because, we're not the only county with a high interest in this area.
But what concerns me is this. It's an unfunded state mandate again that we get. When the state can't operate it, suddenly it's not just our county. Right. We, as counties, then start to have to fill the gap with no additional dollars from the state. And that's what I find most onerous, because we have traditionally just said, wait a minute, state, if you want this, mm-hmm. all right, either give us the money for it if we pass it, or not, or do it at a statewide level. So
right.
To me, that's what, because we would have to figure out a funding mechanism.
And we've certainly had those conversations with the state to say, please do not step into an unfunded mandate. Please make sure that you include a structure for how this will be funded.
All right. Thank you. We need to move on.
Thank you.
Next item is?
Next. So, Rich, you want to stay, and Jill Smith, if you'd like to join us. This is a quick update, commissioners, on the Housing Authority resident commissioner appointment, which you will make this Thursday at your business meeting. But because it's a consent agenda, we wanted staff to quickly share with you the process you went through.
So, once again, Richard Swift with H3S, and I have with me
Jill Smith. With HCS also. Okay.
And I will just turn it over to Jill in terms of this appointment and what this is all about,
okay.
Which we are quite excited about, actually.
We are. First, I wanted to say Paul Reynolds, who's our existing resident commissioner, has been doing this work for over 7 years. And he did express to me several months ago that declining health and a little bit of fatigue, he was ready to transition on to maybe serving on our housing advisory board, looking at development projects and something a little bit less cumbersome for him. So we started working on making that happen for him, and that drove me to look at our bylaws. And we had county council review those and update those, and they speak to the recruitment of our resident commissioners, and you guys approved those last week. So we did that, and then we opened a recruitment for a resident commissioner on November 18th of 2019. That recruitment went through our folks in PGA. They help us tremendously all the time, and it closed on December 16th, 2019. We received 11 applications. The bylaws for the state do require that one of these positions, there's actually the potential for housing authorities to have two what they call resident commissioners, and resident is defined as somebody that lives in Clackamas County. One of the resident commissioners has to be a participant or a tenant of the housing authority participating in our programs, and that is the one we were going to fill, the one that would replace Paul. So that position, we had 11 applications. Three of those folks were actually not participants in housing authority programs. We ended up interviewing myself, Paul Reynolds, Tony Carter, one of my managers, and Stephen McMurtry, interviewed seven folks, and we all agreed on the top candidate, and I hope that you will as well. We're recommending her for appointment, and you'll have the opportunity to meet her. Get to know a little bit about her. Her name is Ann Leenstra. She lives at Hillside Manor. She's lived there for 4 years. She is currently the president elected at the manor of the resident. They have like a resident advisory group there. She's also on their safety team, and she's actively engaged in the resident advisory board that looks at our annual plan every year. She's also on the Milwaukee Tree Board. She's bright, engaged, committed. We're super excited to have her. She's very computer savvy, anxious to be part of this work, and we feel very good about this recommendation. So one more thing. We're going to be saying thank you to Paul Thursday, and right before the business meeting, I know you all are busy, but we are going to have a little just quick brunch in 238 in PSB if any of you want to stop by and thank him in a more casual way.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next, we have two items on North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District. I'll ask Laura and Scott to come to the table, but I don't know if Jim, you want to go first for your update, or if staff wants to go first. Staff, the question is scheduling the next NCPRD board meeting, which is all of you commissioners. We want to do that at an evening meeting in the district. And part of it is to get feedback on the bylaws for the district advisory board.
Yeah, so I guess I could start. I went to the last meeting, kind of blew it up, but I've asked that we complete this with the bylaws by at one more meeting, and that they present it to us for our review, and then we would have a discussion at the NCPRD board meeting. First, we'd have a work session, and we could talk about the bylaws, and then we'd have a present the proposal at the meeting that you guys schedule.
Laura Zettner, Director of Business and Community Services, and I have Scott Archer, Director of NCPRD, with me. So we are happy to have a board meeting to accommodate and talk about the bylaws. Our next meeting for the District Advisory Board is March 11th. We had originally talked about scheduling a March 16th meeting, which won't work timing-wise. Because I think what we're going to do, what we plan on doing at the next meeting, is just saying that this is the last meeting. If we don't get it finished up, staff is going to finish it up and bring it to the board, because this has been going on way too long. So we are open to any time after the 11th to come back. I mean, not the following week, but we need an extra week. So.
Or does the commission want to have, and I believe Commissioner Savas was suggesting at one point, have the NCPRD board meet first to get input from the public that then could advise the district advisory board before they make their final recommendations? So I'm just asking, for what order, commissioners, do you want the governing body to meet before or after the next DAB?
And we're open to whatever you decide.
Paul?
So just for, I got a comment, but I just want to clarify what I heard. So the meeting you're talking about, the 16th, is for the DAB?
The 11th.
Now the 11th is when we have the next NCPRD District Advisory Board meeting, okay. And then we had originally talked about a March 16th meeting for the Board of Directors, okay. For all of you. But that actually won't work timing-wise. So we need to either push it out, or if you want to meet prior to when the DAB meets, I don't know.
We have to move pretty quickly.
We'd have to move for,
or you could postpone the DAB meeting an extra week or two.
So it's up to you all what you want to do.
Okay. Well, yeah, as I kind of mentioned, I think that the, as Jim alluded to, he blew it up, if you will. I would concur. It was a very difficult. It's been very, very. It's actually very difficult when this whole process, as a whether in a liaison role or an interim voting member role, what I am very respectful of others is that if Martha's assigned to the locks committee, I don't attend the locks committee and sit myself down and interject myself, nor do I do that to the fair board and Ken's role, nor do I do that in Chair Bernard's roles as either. So it seems quite unfair. And it's happened several times where my colleagues have injected themselves into this NCPRD process and not even made me aware of their of their communications, or their potential attendance, their attendance thereof, or even said a word to me. I find this very troubling. As I was assigned to our roles about trust, you know, as our roles on our retreats, you know, that my role was to lead by example, and I've been doing that. And maybe that's a discussion for another time, but I think it's very, very difficult. So the delays that and the time that it's taken has been a result of all this. It's been a result of political, outside political influences, not limited to the Board of County Commissioners. So I really think it's important that the we hear from the citizens before we do anything else. I think there's been too much intervention, too much behind-the-scenes activity and influence, and I think it's time for the NCPRD Board of Directors to hear from the public. So I think the sooner we get the date set, the sooner the public knows about it, and the sooner we can get that, and then help guide whatever bylaw discussion thereafter. That's my recommendation.
So I disagree. I mean, these bylaws have been going on for many months. We came down to the mostly done kind of thing. It's just a couple of issues that need to be resolved. The difference between the committees that I'm on and Ken's on is that these are liaison positions. They're not advisory to the Board of County Commissioners. There's a big difference. In the very beginning, I would say I've had very little influence on that board's the directions they've gone, but I had various board members come to me that were concerned about the direction it was going. So I think I'd like to review the bylaws before and then have a meeting about where we're at on the bylaws ahead of that community meeting. It's not a huge. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter, but they need to be done now.
So can I ask a direct question? Okay, so what's the real holdup here? Is it because Milwaukee wants something different than the unincorporated areas?
No.
Kind of what I'm trying to figure out here, because, again, this has been kind of a long-term.
The bylaws now say that the city of Milwaukee appoints two people.
Okay.
So. The issue is, can one be elected or not? The other is there a board member from this board that sits on that committee? Are they a board member? We discussed a temporary placement of a board member on that seat through the bylaws. And that's when we appointed Paul at that night meeting.
So Milwaukee will have two voting members possibly elected on the NCPR board?
They can have. We're not telling them. Yes, I guess they could have two.
Okay. That's what I think the rub is probably with the rest of the district, is because they will feel as if we're their mayors. Does that make sense? the unincorporated area, they see us as their super mayors. And if Milwaukee chooses to appoint electeds rather than Joe Citizen, that's what's going to cause the problem.
So I was I was on that committee for 8 years. I was the mayor. Never had any issues. There's only one city in the district.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they have to accept the bylaws, City of Milwaukee. If we want to push them out of the district, we can do whatever we want.
No, that's pragmatic. But I guess, have they expressed that their two appointees would be elected? That would be my question. It's okay. I mean, I don't care one way or the other, frankly.
Not necessarily.
Elected, not elected, but you can see this is been going on for generations out there about that tug between the unincorporated areas and the cities and blah, you know, it's just the whole thing. It's another iteration of something that's been consistent and long term.
Can you say something?
So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what my question is. I mean, I think if we got assurance it was citizens as opposed to electeds, that would make it easier. They would still have their representation, but then you wouldn't have this.
You want to tell City of Milwaukee what to do? Just go ahead and give them a call.
I can't tell the City of Milwaukee what to do. I can suggest what might bring peace. I can suggest about what might bring peace in our time, however.
Might
be impossible.
So, commissioners, we're only asking you one question. Okay. When do you want to have your meetings? This will take an hour or two to talk about, but not the topic today, please.
Right.
Do you want to Board of Directors meeting first? Yep. Commissioner Savices has suggested that. I think Chair Bernard's saying no, so I need to hear from the rest of you.
I mean, I'm okay.
Governing board meeting first, and then the district advisory board meeting, or vice versa.
Can it hurt too?
I'm open to either before or after. It just whatever direction you provide.
Talk first, and then with the district advisory board, and then hear from the public all in the same meeting. Is there a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem. It seems that.
I see it.
Okay. Is that good?
Gary wanted to say something.
I think he did.
I hear a joint district, a DAB, and this board, or this board?
Well, we could do this board, talk about it while at the same before the meeting, and then transition into.
Hi, Paul.
So, the delays, I maintain. And if someone wants to go to the painstaking effort to listen to the tapes, the delays have been dominated by conversation of elected officials at the table. That's why the delays are there.
Now,
Aaron Ruff, our facilitator, has done a great job. She's indicated that she's not available in March. I would like her to finish her work because she understands the nature of it. So she's not available, as I think she indicated at the last DAB meeting. So it seems timely and most convenient for the board of the board of directors of NCPRD to meet at the 16th or whatever, and let's do that, please. As your liaison and someone who's been intimately involved in this, I really think that is the sweet spot so we can get some guidance on this and have the conversation we need to have 16th? As the board of directors.
March 16th.
Well, whatever day, I think somewhere around that time or beyond, is any time in March, later March, the better for me. But I'm not wedded to the 16th, per se.
Okay. So that's a Monday. That works good for me.
Okay. So just to confirm, so March 16th, and are we going to have it in the district? Are we going to have an evening meeting? Because I know
we have a
day meeting.
Let's do an evening meeting for sure.
6:30 in the district? Okay. We'll get that scheduled, and then I just want to clarify, we're going to not hold the district advisory board meeting on March 11th.
Okay.
Correct. Yes,
good.
Postpone that meeting.
We'll postpone that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We good to go, commissioners, with that?
Sure.
Yeah. Excellent.
Perfect.
All right. Do you have what you need, Laura?
Got it. I have what we
okay.
need.
Okay. Very good.
Cats.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. First, I want to mention Commissioner Savas and Commissioner Schrader did join right after I took roll, so you've been here the entire meeting.
Okay, thank you.
I want to clarify that for the record. Next, Commissioner Savas would like to give a quick update on the Water Environment Services governance process.
Well, actually, my goal of bringing that forward was to ask Commissioner Bernard for that, to provide that update, primarily because when the Oregon Consensus Group met, there was a interim ad hoc subcommittee of the group that met, in which Commissioner Bernard participated. I don't believe that I have all that information. I know I don't, how that went, but we are near completion. We're making maybe some adjustments and changes, but I would just really ask that Commissioner Bernard update us. There's a couple things that I got a couple concerns about, but we didn't have board guidance in that from all of us to Commissioner Bernard and or myself. So I just, if I can, I just politely, courteous, you know, just Commissioner Bernard.
I'll have to schedule that when I have something material in front of me. So I'll schedule it another time.
Okay.
Well, isn't there?
I don't have any.
You can't even share the even the basic tenets of where we are on
it's
that?
It's looking good. Looking good.
Well, that was our last meeting, by the way. So there is no, there's not.
I don't have any material in front of me, Paul.
Okay.
You said you were asking this, not me. So I don't.
Well, I thought that as a duty, that our role of liaisons was to report, and I thought that we could at least be reporting. And I don't have. I'm not privy to what took place in that subcommittee group, which led to a document, which is what's being approved or worked on.
Well, then I would have to bring the document, wouldn't I?
I thought that. Okay, we'll leave it there. Can you do that for us, please?
Sure.
We'll reschedule that. Put it back on the list later. All right. Next, Commissioner Savas had asked for an update on the Here Together Supportive Housing Potential Measure. That was the case last week when he asked. A lot has happened since then. So there are multiple staff in the room. I'll invite whoever would like to come forward to share the latest breaking update of, as we know it, of what has happened since last week to today. I know Commissioner Fisher has also been involved.
Yeah.
So. But just to make sure the entire board is updated on exactly where we're at this moment in time.
Yeah, so I was able to on Sunday when I got word about what the revenue mechanism and strategy would be, I was able to give that information to Commissioner Savas, Chair Bernard, Commissioner Humberston, and I left a message for Commissioner Schrader. But today at 2 p.m., Metro is expected to consider two resolutions, one that will adopt the policy framework that especially Jill Smith has worked so hard on for as part of the Here Together Advisory Committee, and then another ordinance that will deal with the funding mechanism that through the region will generate about $250 million, of which Clackamas County will get a percentage based on population. And Mary Jo, you might remember exactly what it is. Is it 21.33? Okay, Jim Bernard remembers exactly. So I had Mary Jo have all of this information for you that the Metro is considering today, which is not much different than the information that we've received before. There were some things that were taken out. We had a concern in one of the drafts about Metro, what would you say, rejecting members of the advisory committee that we may have wanted on the advisory committee. So we worked through with them and got that language removed. But other than that, things are, they've been a lot of effort by a lot of coalition partners, a lot of work with the three counties coming together, a lot of work with service providers and the business community. And what we've been... the heat has been absolutely amazing in the last 24 hours. Helping you saw a draft of a letter that was distributed. Vahid put in some additional information. Mary Jo, does everybody have that letter?
This is updated from the packet.
Just a little more substance to demonstrate the need in Clackamas County so that we could just... It will help me when I go to testify to have some actual numbers to refer to, and hoping that the commission will support us sending Jim Chair Bernard signing this letter on the board's behalf for the hearing today. So what did I miss? Anything that, Mary Jo, did I miss anything?
Paul is busy running around. Thank you. thank you, Commissioners. Mary Jo Cartesania, Policy Advisor for the Board, and I'm joined by Heed Brown and Rich Swift and Jill Smith, who have been tremendously supportive through this whole process. And I asked them to join me today so we could give you thorough information. I think I'd first like to go over the packet that I handed out. I put little yellow stickies. Oh, I also did share this information with you all in an email that I printed it out for today. And if you'll flip to the first yellow marker that says tax collection requirements, you'll see three asterisks under Section 7, allocation of revenue. And I just wanted to make it easy for you to flip to what I thought would be questions high on your mind. So, so the administrative fee, Metro, the three counties here together in Metro agreed that they could first retain funds off the top to help pay for the instrumentation of this, putting this all together. And once they get through the first year, then they anticipate collecting 5% for the next 9 years. So that's point one. Point two, you'll see where they have the percentage breakout, 21 1/3% to Clackamas County, 45 1/3% to Multnomah County, and 33 1/3% to Washington County. I did share some concern, and there was agreement throughout the counties, Metro, and here together that in a couple of years we can reflect back on the revenue distribution to see if it's accurate, fair, and if not, we will adjust it accordingly. So I thought that that was, because there was such a short turnaround time for this, we went with percentages, and we took the median percent. We took the high, low, and then we chose the median. So that's how we got there. But those numbers will be looked at again in a couple of years. And that's what it states in three, what I just explained. So if you flip to the next tab, which is you just turn the page over to page six, and this is in the Metro, I should probably say what this document is. It's the ordinance number 20-1442, and it is attachment A to the ordinance. So page six at the bottom, I again noted one, two, and three. Those are the tax collection requirements. So for personal income tax rate, beginning tax year 2021, a tax of 1% is imposed on the entire taxable income over $200,000 if filing jointly and $125,000 if filing singly on every resident of the district, subject to tax under ORS Chapter 316, and upon taxable income over $200,000 if filing jointly and $125,000 if filing singly. Of every resident that is derived from sources within the district, which income is subject to tax under ORS Chapter 316. I would like to point out, although it's not specified here, it does include that single parent families are not subject to tax until they reach a taxable income above $200,000. And it's not stated out in this document, however, it will be in the Here Together documents. And when I checked with Here Together, I was told that single parents are included under Oregon Department of Revenue definition of a joint filer. So although it's not spelled out here, it is included that single family parents with dependents would get a break. And then the business profits tax. Beginning tax year 2021, a tax of 1% is imposed on the net income of each person doing business in Metro. And then number three, exceptions for small businesses. Persons who gross receipts from all business income, both within and without Metro, amounting to less than or equal to $5 million, are exempt from payment of the business profits tax. And then the third tab I wanted to refer you to is on page 10 of Exhibit A to Ordinance 20-1442, and I put an asterisk by number 3, and I thought that you would want to know this. Each county must annually contribute no less than 5% of each county's share of the supportive housing services revenue to a regional strategy implementation fund. Our plan is to use this money to work together as a region to serve the publics and address the homeless needs. So I thought those would be biggest on your mind. I did send out an email this week. I should mention, too, that all these documents are available on Metro's website for their council meeting today and the hearing at 2 o'clock. Let's see. There was some concern about the rigorous steps in the local implementation strategy in the Metro documents, but also in these documents, it does state that Metro recognizes that each county may approach program implementation differently depending on the unique needs of the residents and community. It says, therefore, it is the policy of Metro Council that there be sufficient flexibility in implementation to best serve the needs of our residents. So I think based on conversations around the table, we felt comfortable with the documents as they are, and I'd like to open it for questions. And also, I should mention that Fahid worked tirelessly yesterday to get us some additional statistics, and so I've included those statistics in a new draft of the letter for your consideration. We'd like to include this letter as public testimony this later today. So I welcome your questions, and I look to my cohorts here, colleagues, to answer anything that I forgot.
So I was up first, so I actually have comments. And one thing is, thank you for the work you did. Jill sat right next to me, and we negotiated and voted on things. And I've got to thank the Mary Jo, of course, for your help at the many meetings you went to that we couldn't. But I also need to thank the Portland Business Alliance. I frankly thought we were going to go to the meeting and it was over. But they spent the weekend calling everybody and decided that they could accept this deal. Actually, I thought it was going to be a little more restrictive than it is, or at all. So it was amazing. You know, they have 1,700 businesses. I was also quite surprised how many large businesses we have in Clackamas County within the UGB.
107.
Over 25 million. I had no idea.
We have a huge manufacturing traded sector here.
Yeah. So it's just surprising. Anyway, I support moving forward with this letter. But Paul and then Martha.
Is that what we're talking about? Is the letter?
I thought
we were still on the first one, which was my request for the update. So are we on both, or are we on the letter?
I thought we were on
the update.
Oh,
are we?
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Sure.
Thank you.
So I have a couple questions. So on the what is it? It's page 5. How did we? To explain how 21 1/3% is derived, how that number become 21 1/3% based on what?
Population. But Mary Jo was in the room, and that was decided working with the three counties and Metro. So Mary Jo, why don't you explain the process?
Okay.
Well, it was from the PSU population report, and they had a high and a low number for each of the counties, and so we agreed to split it down the middle and take the averages. And again, I'd like to state that because we had such short time frame, I did have concerns with doing it this way. I would have preferred to have another way so we really could dial in and make sure the money coming in stays in, and that is the goal. So, Commissioner Savas, we did agree to revisit this in 2 years and make sure that these make sense. But that's how the numbers were derived. Does that answer your question?
Well, in a way, I guess. But it doesn't sound like there's any mathematical rationale. I mean, it's not about where the employer is; it's about where the employee is. Then, essentially, but that's based on population. We have a higher average family wage income than the other, or one of the higher of the one of the at least one, if not two, of the counties. So therefore, you know, that might be mathematically imbalanced.
I just want to make a comment to that, in that Clackamas County is unique in the region in that only half of our population resides in the urban growth boundary, whereas the other two counties have a much larger percentage of their population that resides in the urban growth boundary. So how it all plays out, this looked to be the most equitable, and we don't know how much revenue will be raised by the different business communities in Washington County. Whereas Multnomah County and Clackamas County were concerned that Washington County would, it would be very imbalanced because they will have the bulk of the, most likely the bulk of the business income.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if that's...
Yeah, but we don't know for sure. So doing it based on population for who resides within the UGB is how those percentages were broken.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if that's legally defensible, but okay.
We may actually benefit from that breakout too, quite honestly. We don't know yet, so.
Okay, so on the business side of it, that's based on the location of the business, or it's not? It's going to be divvied up. I guess we're just right back to, I guess I'm answering my own question. So basically, the first answer applies to all of it. It's not really where it's derived. It's just based on the population, you know, a guesstimate of the population split. Okay. So I'm going to jump to the other question, the committee structure. Mm-hmm. This committee, I thank you, Commissioner Fisher, for clarifying that the language that gave the Metro Council apparently ultimate authority to deny any representative coming from Clackamas County or any other jurisdiction, they had the unilateral right to deny them. I just think that's just, fortunately, that's been removed completely, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So the structure, of course, we all agree and have proclamations. I don't have any problem with having diversity on that representation, but I think from the level of expertise and perhaps the stature in which that might be an advantage at the table, if we have a couple representatives. For example, I'll just give an example. If we have two people from one county on a city on a committee, and you know they are, you know, average working class people, and then another jurisdiction has two elected officials, and then another jurisdiction's got two attorneys. That the level of expertise around the table is maybe demonstrably different and unfair. So my question is, in the structure of this, how is that really going to, with knowledge and expertise, going to actually have an effective role for the committee itself to make sure that any recommendations going forward? Because you're saying in 2 years we're going to readjust it. It sounds to me like this committee is going to have a lot of power in making that call. So how is it going to be structured? Do we ensure that we've got the best people? Can that be two elected officials from Clackamas County?
So,
commissioners,
there'll be ex officio commissioner or ex officios for all three counties serving on the oversight committee. That's part of the structure. But, Paul, you ask really good questions. And what we really relied on is Jill's expertise and how they did the Metro Housing Bond and how we worked to get representation from Clackamas County on there. So it's a political process, and we will have to work through that. It is not totally prescribed. We fought them totally prescribing it because we want to make sure that we have a strong seat at the table.
And we did push for it to be similar to the Metro Bond, the way they developed that. And I think that's what they've adopted based on what I'm seeing here, which is we really encouraged people we wanted to apply, and we nominated them. And then the final decision for five. I like that there's five from each county, regardless of the amount of money you're receiving. I think that's a good thing. And the most important thing about working with an equity lens is having a diverse group of folks at the table. You know, homeless people right next to the attorney, everybody with equal say. So,
I think it's got to be structured. It's got to be balanced. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think no matter what committee it is, it's got to be fair and balanced. I apologize for everyone. When Commissioner Fisher called me Sunday morning, I've been dealing with a family matter, so I'm farther behind than I ever remember being behind. I haven't had a chance to go through there. Is there a clause in here or a section that's committed towards audit review?
Yes.
Okay. And can someone just explain what that says or where it's at?
It's an annual review. Each jurisdiction has to supply a annual report for our implementation strategy plan, and then we also need to have those reports annually audited. And it is in here.
Section 16.
Also. It's page 8.
Page 8, section 16.
Okay, so specifically, one of my concerns, aside from how the dollars are distributed or spent within the counties or the region, is also about the admin cost, right? And I see, if I read that correctly, that it can be up to 5% for Metro, but if it doesn't meet that, then they don't charge the whole thing. They don't just automatically get it. So is there an audit function in here that audits that as well? And also the county admin cost as well?
Yeah, the state is limiting to Metro to 5%. They're not limiting us. Right?
Well, what I'm saying is I'm talking about the audit function that to make sure that the whatever admin cost, basically, as I stated way long time ago on this, I want to make sure that every possible dollar goes towards the services rendered
right.
as opposed towards anything else. Mm-hmm. Is there an audit function in here spelled out?
Yeah, you can look at section 16, yeah, sub 2.
Yep.
It just defines the audit function.
If I may,
they're subject to performance audit audits as well.
I can read it.
It's not directed to Metro though. It's direct as I read it. It's directed to the local governments by the Metro Council, but not of the Metro Council's admin function. That's how I read this.
If I may, related to the local implementation strategy, there is nothing that enjoins us from, you know, inserting our own language or requirements regarding what we would like to see as audit functions related to the activities of Clackamas County.
Yeah, I just think that if Metro's part of this and they're going to have their own auditor auditing us, there's no one auditing Metro. There needs to be independent. I think there's be an independent audit authority on this because they're receiving revenue. And then the other percentage, that other part that bothers me, and explain this to me, is the peel off for the each county or jurisdiction shall commit 5%, and 5% of $250 million would be what, 12? What is that? $5 million? That'd be $12.5 million, if I'm not mistaken, total. And so how, you know, what are all these audit roles and functions in kind and apply to that money as well?
But
is that an annual set aside?
It is an annual set aside. It is intended for the jurisdictions to use that money to work together to plan regionally. Let's say we wanted to purchase some type of software program so that we could all track referrals. You know, we don't yet know exactly what those options are going to be. There'll be much discussion about it in the future. Initially, I thought that 5% was to be for admin fees, but in the paperwork, it states it goes to this fund. So,
can I elaborate on that?
Yes,
I had
please.
A hard time with that as well until I just read Section 23, Item 3, and it actually says 5% of each of the county's share will go to a regional strategy implementation fund. So if we're using that to implement regional services, then I am okay with that. I also I struggle with more admin going to, you know, just meet and develop a strategy. It says implementation fund, so I think we can hold them to that. We are trying to work together regionally.
Well, again, the principle, as I stated early on, all along I've been very, no, just personally adamant that every possible dollar goes towards the services needed by the people who needed the services. So if it was worded that each county must annually contribute no more than 5%, that's a lot different than no less than 5%. So that's potentially no less than 5% may not reach. And might not be for a purpose of which, again, services aren't really rendered. And, you know, what mathematically, that's a lot of money. That means in 10 years, that's $112 million.
There is a huge need for us to work together. We are very siloed, and we've already started that work. Multnomah County is supporting us applying for shelter money from the state, and they're stepping away. They recognize that homelessness, I mean, all the services, the majority of them are there, and the people aren't just there. They're across the region. So I think it's us trying to develop a regional system of providing services, not just, but I it says implementation, and that's why I feel comfortable with it again.
And we felt it was important to set aside some money specifically geared towards us working together as a region, and we think it's important that we need to pool our resources and really plan together. This is such an important problem that we're solving. We all felt we need each other, so that's how that was proposed.
Well, yeah, the cause is a good one. I don't think anyone's arguing that. I think it's just really being in a defensible financial position, and you know, that could accrue to a lot of money that may not be go to the best purposes, and maybe it's better spent on the ground. And if it's no more than, or it's capped, there was a cap in there that said if it gets up to a certain amount, it goes back to the counties in the same proportion. But it isn't, it's not worded that way. It's worded as a growing account, essentially. It could be.
It could be. You know, we're going to be doing our implementation strategy and putting requirements on ourselves. That strategy can also put some requirements on others. The Tri-County Planning will also have its own planning process and efforts that are going to put requirements on a regional response to housing and houselessness, which, as Jill's talked about, we do need. You know, we know that across the borders, the houseless don't care about borders. And so we do need to have some response that is actually not organized around boundaries and borders. But at the same time, there is a high motivation to make sure that these funds go for services to do something about this issue. We are not interested in increasing our administrative overhead beyond what we need to do this work. So there's a lot. I mean, a lot is being asked of the board in terms of unknowns or things that are not totally established. But at the same time, we are going to be paying very, very, very close attention to this. This has had Jill's scrutiny, my scrutiny, Vahid's scrutiny. You know, Mary Jo's been outstanding in terms of keeping up on top of all of the flow coming from this effort. And this time frame is fast. No two ways around that. It is fast.
Thanks,
Rich. I'll yield to my colleague.
Martha.
Yeah, I'll be faster. I'm okay with a letter going out. That's fine. I think this train has left the station, so that's all right with me. But I do have a few, just a couple of questions. I'd like a list of those 107 larger businesses, and it has to be net or gross over $25
million. Oh, wait, this is businesses over $5
million. Over $5
million? Yeah. We were just researching what businesses, how many. We didn't know. Jim and I didn't know how many businesses we had over $25
million. I didn't think there were any close to that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I do want to caution folks that the criteria for small business can go as high as $21.5 million, particularly for service businesses. And if you're saying it's only on larger business, that is actually, it doesn't seem to fit. Just because a business has a smaller team of employees, a small market area, they can have a sole partnership, ownership and taxes, and a limited area of fewer locations. They are easily over $5 million. So the question is whether or not you think something like Miles Fiberglass would be a small business or a large business. I would probably say they more than likely fit the criteria of small business. Mm-hmm. So I do think we need to be careful when we're talking about a business tax, about whether it's large or small, if we're just using a $5 million threshold. Okay? So I just want that on the record that, you know, we're not talking about taxing businesses that are necessarily all trade sector global evil corporations. Okay? Just saying. We could be taxing some of our mom and pops that have been particularly successful, at least when you look at the Small Business Association criteria for that. So that's the other thing. And the other thing I wanted to ask is the tax is going to be on high earners dependent on where they work, not on where they live. I think you told me, I'm just trying to make sure I get it on the, that I am understanding it, that someone who is coming from outside of the UGB but is working here in the urban growth boundary is going to be taxed for that. I just, and I'm okay. I mean, I'm not saying no to this. I just want some clarification.
It's every resident in the UGB that's filing in the UGB with that income threshold, and non-residents whose income is derived within
the UGB.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's
that's
both.
That's something else too. Yeah, because longer term, what I worry about, and I've said this before, is we have rural areas that are also suffering for this, and yet folks that may be living in rural areas are actually going to be helping to pay for helping our urban areas. And I think we need to recognize that, and I need to think we need to start looking long term about opportunities for our rural communities. And I know that you've been working with Estacada, and who else? Estacada, Malala.
We're having conversations with Sandy and Malala as well.
Okay. And Estacada. We have a meeting coming up with Estacada next week.
I would like to be kept in the loop with that.
Absolutely.
Because I suspect there are USDA funds that are easily accessed for housing that we have not looked into. Okay, I don't know if you work with the USDA at all in terms of housing for definitions of rural communities or not, but
we have one complex that's through USDA that's in Malala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they have been really over the past few years, as I've been tracking them at the federal level, they've been upping their dollar opportunities for housing in rural communities. So we might, and plus we're trying a statewide project as well that was like tooth and nail trying to get OCHS to even give us the money for a pilot project in a rural area to really look at their local problems. So that's going to have to be another legislative piece pursued with more help from people if we're going to equitably serve the entire county. So that's good. But we're not basing the money on data on where the highest income earners live. In other words, it's on population. So do we know which counties? I mean, Multnomah's getting the bulk of the money, are they not?
Correct.
Okay. And we're number three.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. And it's based on population.
Yes.
So I guess my question is, nobody's done any statistical or information dealing with where are the high income earners and should it stay where those high income earners are? I don't know. All I know is that Happy Valley, for example, is one of the wealthiest communities in the state. Mm-hmm. So why are we, again, so it's based on population. I get that. And like I said, I don't care because, I mean, I care. But I know that this is a borderless situation. Mm-hmm. But we do have to be aware where the wealth is coming from in order to implement this. Mm-hmm. And that's just what I wanted to make clear.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Schrader. That's why we're going to revisit it in 2 years. Because that is a concern.
Yeah.
But because it's moving it so rapidly, it's difficult to project those numbers yet at this time.
We are going to send a letter out. Is that correct? That's what I saw. Okay.
Well, she's testifying today.
Yeah, and I was hoping to
just
deliver
the letter.
On behalf of the commission.
No, I think that's fine.
If everybody agrees to the letter. I wanted a little more meat other than we just support identifying what the need is, and Vahid got us some good numbers. Everybody has that. Mm-hmm. Letter, and if you're good, then Chair Bernard could sign it, and I will deliver it
today. I'm absolutely okay with this, but I do think that there are outstanding questions, and I think there needs to be more information about what constitutes big versus small business, because I would suspect we may have a number of small businesses who might be a little concerned.
So it's like 2022 before we get this money, right?
Probably.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I thought it was 2022. So there's a lot of work to do.
Okay.
A lot of work
tax
to do.
Tax year's 2021.
Because if we go into a recession, which might be likely because all the indicators because of the market recently and the coronavirus are indicating we could be in for a free fall for a while. We don't know yet. Yeah. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Paul?
So just clarifying on the math. So if person X owns a large corporation subject to the tax, the corporation will pay the tax. And if that same person who owns a corporation resides in there, the person will pay the income tax as well. So that person would be paying two taxes, correct?
Well, the business, it's on net income. So the salaries that people get when they work for a business are deducted from the profits of a business. But there's not a double taxation.
But if I own the company, my company is paying a tax, correct?
On net income.
Right, right. And then if I pay myself, then I have a salary above the cap, I'm also paying the tax as well. So they're being double taxed.
Well, not being, the income isn't being double taxed. It's different. It's net income for the business.
Right.
And then it's income.
Yeah. I get it. But they are paying two taxes for this out of the same company. Well, for the same income.
Well, that would be a type of corporation depending upon the corporate structure. Yeah. You'd be a shareholder. If it's a corporation, you'd be a shareholder and you'd pay taxes on your income. You're not the owner of the business, you're a shareholder.
Well, of course you are, but if you're a majority shareholder, even if you're a minority shareholder, it still applies.
You're a shareholder, you're not the owner of the business. But, okay. Anyway, so we're good?
Yeah, do we need a vote for the letter for Jim to do that, or do we have
consensus?
You should vote because basically you're taking a position.
Okay.
Move to approve the letter.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the letter. There's no amendments, right?
Nope.
Okay. As written?
I've got a question. What again is the purpose of the letter?
Just to show support, I think, is it?
Yes, to show support and submit it into the record tonight at Metro, this afternoon at the Metro hearing.
All right. With that, will you please poll?
Yes. Commissioner Schrader?
Aye.
Commissioner Chavez?
I support the letter.
Commissioner Fisher?
Aye.
Commissioner Humbertson?
Aye.
Chair Bernard?
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
With all five of you supporting it, would you be amenable to me changing it so you each sign?
Yeah.
Would that be?
I prefer just to have the chair sign it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you all for your time today.
Thank you.
And your patience with me getting you the information. It's been coming really fast. And
Mary Jo, you've done a very excellent job.
You've all been very patient and kind. Thank you.
All right. Next, we have a draft response to many emails you're getting, commissioners, about the search and rescue initiative by the sheriff. There's a draft response in your packet. This would come from you as the board. So we're seeking your approval of that statement.
Moved to approve.
Second.
Yeah, it's been moved and seconded to approve the letter as drafted. Any further discussion? Please poll.
Commissioner Schrader?
Aye.
Commissioner Savitz?
Aye.
Commissioner Fisher?
Aye.
Commissioner Humbertson?
Aye.
Chair Bernard?
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
I do have one thing on that letter. Is that one that we might want to entertain having all signatures on?
Be perfectly satisfied.
So this is going to be an email response, not a mailed letter.
I'm okay just with the chair, guys. I don't think we need to put our names on everything. I'm just fine.
Well, since we all agreed it's sincerely Board of County Commissioners, I think that's good. On an email?
Yeah.
If it's an email, it's pretty hard to have all five signatures, so mm-hmm. I don't care. If we're sending a letter, I'd say all five.
I appreciate you all paying attention. This is something I've been... Well, not just this particular issue, but the search and rescue issue over the last 9 years of being here has been a very difficult one. I want to say thank you to my colleagues for supporting the monies. We help them for their storage and their area, work area for their vehicles. I do at some point want to bring out what occurred at one of the budget meetings, not today, but in the future I want to bring out what occurred in 2015, I believe, with regard to search and rescue during the budget committee. But I'll just give you a heads up that will be coming as well.
All right, Gary, what's next?
All right, your review of your business meeting agenda for this Thursday, February 27th. You have Housing Authority consent agenda. You have a special Housing Authority presentation to recognize Housing Authority Commissioner Paul Reynolds, who is ending his term. And you have a consent agenda. Nothing that stands out to me as controversial. If you have any questions, if you please let me know prior to Thursday, and we can answer them for you. Before we are way over time, but if you'd like to do commissioner communications, but a quick reminder, this afternoon we may not have a quorum for our policy sessions, so I just want to draw that to your attention because Commissioner Fisher is going to Metro, Chair Bernard is going to Salem to testify, so just really relying on Commissioner Savage, Schrader, and Humberston to be here. But if you feel you can't, either we need to make changes now or just give a notice to staff.
Yeah, as I will just, as you all know, and I mentioned earlier today, that I'm going to be touch and goes for the next week or two, so I may have to leave at some point in time. So if there's a quorum question, I'm sorry if I have to leave.
Is there anything we need to do in case that occurs that we could move to now?
There's one that we probably should address, which is the Columbia Distributing Rural Strategic Investment Zone.
Let's do, and that's, do that.
Can we?
Right,
I mean, that's
that
a 3 right o'clock now. One, and then...
Can we?
You want to see if we can do it earlier.
All times are approximate. We say that on the schedule, but it is noticed to be at 3 p.m. today.
What are we doing earlier?
And there's no attorney in the room, so I don't know. I believe that we can move it now. Are you the only staff to present, Laura?
No, I would have to go.
Yeah. We could do it at 1:30, right at 1:30?
Sure.
When we know that all five of you likely will be here?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, wait, I won't be here at 1:30.
Okay.
But
four of you would be here.
But everybody else will.
Let me check my Salem. I have to be down there by...
At 4.
By what?
At 4, you have to be there.
Oh, yeah, well, I think I'll be here at 1:30 then.
Well, there's a 1:30.
Kent?
I was given to understand earlier that the fire department from Canby might want to be present for this. Okay, so can we give them a quick call, let them know that we're going to move this up on the agenda as a courtesy if they care to be here?
Yes, we could do that.
Sure. Can somebody do that? Call Canby Fire?
I just think it's common courtesy given that we heard that they might be here.
All right, so I'm hearing then, commissioners, you would support moving the Columbia Distributing Policy Session to right at 1:30.
Mm-hmm.
We'll notify the fire department folks, and we'll go throughout the rest of the day, and then if we don't have a quorum, then we will adapt to that.
What and then there is the ZDO 276 at 1:30.
It says time sensitive.
Well, that's the amendments are called time sensitive amendments, right, not great. The policy session. I mean, yes, it'd be ideal to do that today. We'll make it all work. Okay. And then with the time remaining, although several of you have a meeting in 20 minutes, Commissioner Communications.
Who'd like to start? Ken.
I'll start. So, and I will be brief, attended the union president's meeting, did a ride along with community paramedics, particularly impressed with Amy Jo Cook's program. I'm going to have a discussion with Richard Swift about how we might be able to help support that program. Went to the Clackamas Service Center's thank you dinner, very well attended. A number of us attended the Hoodland Women's Club meeting regarding the establishment of a parks district in that area and properties that we may be turning over to them if they are successful in their effort. Had the pleasure of going to the VFW's 95th birthday party. I attended the Milano Hamlet meeting, the French Prairie Forum, and Congressman Schrader's roundtable. Thank you. That concludes my report.
Next.
Yeah.
Sonia?
So ahead. My commissioner communication is all about working on Here Together and being on call over the weekend as things progressed and working with Mary Jo and our staff. So I think you are all up to speed on what I've been working on as far as my liaison report.
Great. Martha?
I've been pretty busy as well. I met with Diana Helm and Dean Apostle. They have some issues with Happy Valley that I have to talk with staff about wildlife corridors, which was originally in the plan for Damascus, but now that we have annexations going on, they'd not really like not to have that lost in the dust. So I'll be taking a look at that. We had a great Lakewood board meeting on Tuesday evening, the 19th. We basically moved ahead with our new season, and they are very, very financially stable. They're one of the actually top six, including Kirk's group, theater organizations, and arts organizations in the county. I did have time to spend, I had to miss the strategy meeting, so I would like to meet with you, Chair, to see what happened during the strategy meeting, if we can find some time today, because I was down at the Blue Heron site, basically, with Representative Blumenauer. It's the first time he visited it. He was very, very interested in it. I think we have another ally there in moving ahead with that, and that was with the tribe, two representatives from the tribes, and it was a beautiful day. It was nice to get out for a change. It was a gorgeous day to actually get out and look around. Did the large urban county conference call because we'd be going to NACO, and I'll be working with those folks. The other thing is that at the 95th anniversary of OFC, the Veterans of Foreign War, really was the best bagpipe music I've ever heard. It was absolutely phenomenal with the drums, with the music. And I've got a Williams tape, and I've been sending it to everybody I know because it was kind of an outstanding opportunity to do that. I did go to the Concord Oak Lodge work session, and that was really great to go to and getting a feel for what's been going on with those folks there in terms of what's going on in Concord, and had an opportunity to meet with OTAC folks on Friday, and that was a really, really good meeting, and they asked about our economic development initiatives here, so I had an opportunity to brief that group. They do a lot of work for us, actually, here in the county. They do a lot of building construction work for us, and they're very, very interested in what's happening with the courthouse, so we'll see what happens with that. And then I did attend with my two colleagues the Hoodland community meeting regarding the Parks District. We really would like to see them have a Parks District up there, and I think they're very organized, and they'll hopefully be able to pull that off. And finally, I had a meeting yesterday with Judge Steele at Singer Hill Cafe, where we talked about the courthouse and the timing of where that's going. So that was it for me.
All right, okay. Paul?
Can I just ask Martha a question real quick before you go? Is there anything we should know about the historical folks, the Heritage
really.
Folks wanting to visit?
Gary and I had a meeting with them, and we have both suggested that they talk to you both directly about this. Essentially, what they want to have us do is look at funding for the Museum of the Oregon Territory. And in a constrained budget, we've been very clear that's going to be somewhat difficult. There's been talk of a history hub. That might be workable. There's been talk of a broader liaison with the Willamette Falls Heritage folks. I know, Gary, you want to, I said you need to talk to the other commissioners as well as just me. So is there anything you
want to add? Yes, and they want to discuss, again, potentially using transit lodging taxes for heritage purposes.
Yeah.
I wanted to see what your input is on that.
Thank you for that, because that really was the gist of it. And it is our county museum, and it is the Museum of the Oregon Territory. It would cause some consternation with the smaller museums, but they are the ones that should be the major repository of things. But I am strongly telling them that they need to talk to all five of you, not just get it from me, but get it from them as well.
I've already met with them.
You already met with them? Okay.
Thank you for that update.
Okay, there we go.
Paul? Yeah, so I, as you all know, I just give you the most relevant reporting I can as opposed to what my laundry list of things I've done. So with that, even this morning I learned Commissioner Bernard shared with me that Metro opposed the bill in the legislature with regard to the bill, I-205 bill. The JPAC, whether it's a JPAC or the Region 1 Act or it's in other forums, Metro seeming to be in conflict, and also the JPAC trip coming up, you know, the idea has always been that we speak with one voice as a region, we work together as a region, and that's really not really been happening lately. And I would say that not necessarily, I kind of alluded to this before, but the difference of opinion or the people that seem to be going at each other or critical of each other. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's one way. It's actually Metro being directed a lot towards ODOT. I think it's really been a little bit out of balance. And at JPAC, this came up again. And one of the Metro counselors made some very strong comments, directed to ODOT. They were, in this case, about process. And, you know, I actually, even though they were directed as they were, I think that the context of the counselor's comments were something I agreed with as far as process. But the irony is that in this particular case, it seems as though that the process he's asking ODOT to do is, I think, proper, but it's not something that Metro really does at all, as a matter of fact. And I kind of pointed that out, that that would be ideal if we could adopt that in all our processes, because that's really what makes Oregon, I think Oregon is what I appreciate about Oregon, is goal one, public meetings law, inclusiveness, and all those things. And that's, it was a little bit different that ODOT needs to be held at a different standard than Metro itself, and Metro saying you need to hold up. So it was, I just wanted to just give you that update, that that's a ongoing thing. At the Metro subcommittee, our C4 Metro subcommittee meeting on Wednesday morning, they elected a new city rep for MPAC. And I explained that Commissioner Schrader's longstanding request that the meetings were scheduled at a time where there was no conflicts. Yeah. That was something that I kind of, on your behalf, respectfully tried to share that. So to replace Mayor Gamba, because Mayor Gamba is stepping back from the impact role, but was also discussed towards the end was the concept of the Washington County Coordinating Committee and the Clackamas County Coordinating Committee to get together to discuss the T2020 measure. Because precisely, almost verbatim, what the Metro Councilor stated at JPAC is really the model that ought to be used, and really that's all the cities can get engaged, and the cities of Clackamas County and the cities of Washington County that are within the metro boundaries have a discussion about this, and they've been excluded really in a substantive, meaningful role in this T2020 measure. So I think we need to take a position, especially when we have Metro is opposing our own, not our own, but a regional project like 205. They constantly have been, I felt, have not really been supportive, and in some ways seem to be, by their position, undermining it. And the longer it gets dragged out, the higher the cost will be. So that's my update with regard to those.
I don't have anything important to say, so I'm going to go ahead and go to lunch with the sheriff today.
Oh, good.
All right.
Good.
So
we're
adjourned till
1:30. Yep.
Okay. And then, right. I'll have to leave.